you can't get away with it anymore to just say, like, look, we have this huge volume of data. We know everything about everybody in Belgium. Well, that should raise a red flag, because that's not how this really works.
Hello, everyone, and welcome back to another episode of Identity Architects, the InfoSum podcast that spotlights the incredible leaders in the media industry shaping the future of data-driven advertising. I'm your host, Ben Cicchetti, and this week I had the opportunity to sit down with Lisbeth Bernards, data and tech lead at IPG Media Brands Belgium. Together, Lisbeth and I dive into the Belgium landscape, exploring how the ecosystem is preparing for the cookieless future, the importance of data privacy and transparency, and much, much more. Before we jump into that conversation, this is your reminder to hit that subscribe button so you'll always be the first to know when the latest episodes of Identity Architects drop. But without any further delay, here's my conversation with Lisbeth. Lisbeth, welcome to the podcast.
Hi, Ben.
So for anyone who doesn't know you, can you give us a quick introduction to yourself, but also to IPG Media Brands Belgium?
Yes, sure. So I'm the Director of Data and Tech at IPG Media Brands Belgium. IPG Media Brands is a client-focused agency, and there are subsets of different departments on that. So we have, for instance, UM, Universal Media and Initiative. Those are the full-service client-focused front doors, to say so. We have Kinesso, of which I am part of, which is more tech-driven. It's about performance, intelligence. We have Orion, which is media bartering, mostly. We have Magna, which is media marketing, intelligence, and negotiation. And then Rapport, to say it in French, is they have the specialty of the out-of-home activation.
Wow, that's awesome. I think there's going to be tons for us to cover then. I'm excited to dig into the Belgian landscape, but also everything you're doing there. Before we get into kind of those kind of topic-related questions, I'd like to get to know you a little bit better. So we'll start the way we always do, which is with a series of quick-fire questions. And the first being, what is your earliest memory of advertising?
I had to think back quite a while, but the earliest one ever is Lucky De Leo. That's Flemish. It's actually Dutch, from the Dutch television back in the days. Like, I'm still very young, but we had to turn the knob to change channel. Yeah. And so you had Nederland 1, 2, and 3. And Lucky De Leo was kind of a lion who was put in between advertisement series. And so he would do funny things. I'm not entirely sure. I remember because we lived quite around, and we lived in the Netherlands with my young children when they actually decided to stop doing that. There was a whole thing about it in the Netherlands. I think this lion has been active for 20, 30 years, a very long time. So that was actually fun.
That's awesome. I'm going to have to look that up. I haven't seen that before, so I'm going to have to definitely look that up for you. Yeah. So kind of taking yourself back to that mindset, before you landed in the world of media and advertising, what did you want to be when you were growing up?
That's quite a hard... I've never really known what I wanted to be. I'm still a little bit like that. I did a lot of things as a child. I was good at a lot, so nothing really jumped out. If I have to choose one thing, and that's maybe something that I should have picked up if somebody knows me, they know my hair is always a huge, big mess. So hairdresser would have been a good thing.
Nice. That's awesome. That's a good way to look at it. I like that. That's great. So obviously you did land in the world of media and advertising. What was your first job in either advertising or marketing or the industry as a whole?
My first job was a very brief one. I actually hated it. It was, I had to make folders and put everything for a folder in PageMaker, Adobe PageMaker at the time.
Right. Okay. Very admin heavy.
Yes.
So what do you think it was about the advertising industry now that you're in it that kind of drew you in the first place? And what kind of keeps you in our ecosystem and in our advertising industry?
I was, after that experience, I was out for quite a bit, did some other stuff, and I got drawn back in because at some point, you know, the everything changed and changed very rapidly, and things are changing now, but even back in the days, became more automated, it became more structured. And what I really, really like is the creativity from one part. Like on the early days with PageMaker, I have several I did several things, several studies, so that's typical. But one of my diplomas is actually a bachelor in graphic design. So, and I really liked that, but it was not at all what I wanted to do for the rest of my life. So, and at some point I learned that you can be extremely creative and then combine it with everything that's like coding and mathematics and analysis and automation. So it was a pure play dynamic creative technology platform. And so there it really got picked up and I got super excited with it with that combination. Lots of changes, never boring, always new things. And I think that's still what keeps me in there, still excited about everything that's happening.
Yeah, it's a never changing industry.
Yeah. Yeah, you never get the feeling, you never get bored, right? Exactly. Yeah. You never feel like you completely master a thing because there's already something else. And I need that challenge. And that's a great thing.
Yeah, continually pushing yourself kind of outside your comfort zone as well. Right, it's what keeps me engaged anyway and keeps me interested is never feeling comfortable and always looking for kind of the next thing. So yeah, and yeah. It's that marry up for you of the kind of the art of marketing, the art of the creative with the kind of the science of it, with the data and the automation, everything. So it's kind of like that perfect combination for anybody in the marketing industry. Exactly. So, you know, you must speak to people who are early in their careers on a regular basis. So what advice would you give to someone who is just starting, just joining our crazy industry of media and advertising?
Yeah, the only thing I can say is just sit back and enjoy the ride. Yeah. That's it. It's really it.
Yeah, it's great advice. It's very good advice. Lots going on. But it's true, really, right? If you can sit back and just enjoy it rather than getting stressed about change and trying to overthink everything that's happening, if you can just sit back and enjoy it, it's a hell of a ride. Yeah. Sticking with people younger, but going even younger than that to say a 10-year-old, how would you describe what we do within media and advertising to a 10-year-old?
I really had to think about that one. I would never, ever deliberately harm a 10-year-old with doing so. But I can say what my husband says when we go out, like when we were in public and we meet people and then sometimes people ask, what's your wife doing? Because we're in very different areas of professional areas. And so then he always says, yeah, you know, when you are on your laptop or you go on Facebook or whatever, and you see these annoying ads just pop up, and that's what she does. So that's his description. I have nothing to do with that. I try to optimize things. And then, so that's how he sees it, which is very...
That's funny.
On that childish level to me. That's as far as I got in explaining really what we do, what I do.
Yeah, that's fair. And it's very relatable, right? Everyone's seen those ads. So it's a very quick and easy way to describe kind of what you do. But obviously, trying to make it optimum and actually make it ads that people are enjoying and engaging with is the real skill there.
Yeah.
So obviously you talked about an industry that never changes and kind of constant kind of development within industry. What inspires you on a daily basis and keeps you motivated within the advertising industry?
Well, exactly that everything is constant. You never have a feeling like, okay, this is it. I got it. Let's look for something new. That really never happens. There is a lot of ups and downs, of course. There's a lot of changes. I really like that. And I'm keen for a challenge, but I'm also keen to have things still a little bit under control. So that's why this whole analysis and data part and technology and automation also stems from is really just try to see through the wilderness. And it's, for me, it's really challenging. And like I said, I like it more and more, I think.
I think it's a great way to look at, see it through the wilderness is a great way to look at kind of what we're doing at times. So the final of our quickfire questions and my personal favorite of the quickfire questions, because it tells me a lot about a person. I get to know someone quite quickly by this question. If there was a song that was a soundtrack to your life, what would it be?
And that's a really hard one, right? Because there's a lot of songs. I'm particular about music though, but don't like everything. Definitely not. I know very good what I don't like. I like a lot of songs. There's one song that I have to mention just for the sake of, and it's actually Massive Attack, Unfinished Sympathies.
Excellent.
It's a little bit of a classic these days, but when I was younger, it was fairly new and it's also basic. It was innovative. So that's related to what we are doing here. And then based on the use of specific samples, so it was considered to be very innovative. At the same time, what I really like about it, it's about human emotions, about imperfections. It's about the search of recognition, of fulfillment, of a little bit more perfection. harmonization is one that I really sense. And then, of course, also, and that's maybe the most important one, like I said, it actually refers to my ground. And my ground is not where I live necessarily, because live many places. It's really just my family. I know it sounds a bit cocky, but it's that's the truth. Like, I can live with these people, my son, my daughter, my husband. I can live with them anywhere. They will always be my ground. And so the song is actually was our opening ceremony song. So that's why it's just a very special song to all of us. And I have to refer to that one.
I love that. That's an excellent reason as well. And I love kind of all the meaning behind it. So that's fantastic. And obviously we have a playlist of every song that anyone's ever picked for on our podcast. So we will add that to that Spotify playlist so people can enjoy it when this comes out, which is awesome.
That's so cool.
Excellent. So we'll move on to some of the more topic related questions now. And obviously we have a global audience listening to this. So for those that may not be as familiar with the Belgian market, can you give us a quick update on the industry status quo in Belgium? And because it is very much the hot topic right now, how well the ecosystem in Belgium is prepared for the cookieless future in general, but also compared to other markets?
Yes. Indeed, cookieless, very hot topic, although it's been going on and it's been very well announced already since 2018 and so on. So 6 years already, we have these regular updates and we are talking to everybody in the industry and our clients. And right now, it's really there. This year is going to be pivotal. Google is now the final one, right, to have everything going. Belgium is, I think... Belgium is a very specific country. It's very small. It's divided, very divided. It's right, just the languages and culturally it's different. There's also slightly different, like we work with a lot of local publishers, for instance, which are always very dear to us. And so at the same time, we're also very pragmatic. Belgian people are doers. We don't talk so much normally. We just do it. We all build our own stone brick houses. That's a tradition too. So everything needs to be done really solidly and there's no quick thing. There's no, so that's, I really like that because that also means with the whole cookieless, which was actually a whole construction of, not the cookieless, I mean, the cookies themselves was a whole construction. The whole thing was built on stuff that wasn't necessarily as solid as it ever pretended to be. So, for me, this is really not a bad thing. And I think a lot of, if we talk to clients, a lot of Belgian, whether it's publishers, whether it's clients, whether it's data provider partners, whatever, are following this trend. At the same time, which is also very particular for Belgium, and I know this from, we did a few years back, we did research when we were actually working in a DMP, data management platform for a client. So third-party data has never been significant in Belgium at all. Lots of discussions because some would say there was definitely third-party data even to this very day. But we know from hand, we did that with all the third-party data providers that we provide via DMP, the third-party data, we actually found out with just basic, simple matching that it's not at all Belgian data. It was usually from neighboring countries, from France, from the Netherlands. So it's absolutely nothing valuable. And that meant we were actually also forced to focus even more on your own environment, your first party data users. So to that part, it's a bit quicker. It doesn't mean that we're technically more advanced than any other market. It's very often not the case. And actually, I know a lot of people would say that we're a little bit behind. I'm not necessarily convinced because I think apart from the fact from the tech part that's now developing a new platforms arise and new ways and new, everybody's looking for the best one. It's also a mentality. And that mentality, I think, is here very much.
So I guess the you mentioned it there and the flip side of the third-party cookie and of third-party data clearly is first-party data and the rise of that as a kind of a priority for many businesses. How do you see IPG Media Brands and your clients positioned from that perspective, from a first-party data perspective, as compared to others in the industry globally and regionally?
globally, we see a lot of things are coming from us. Like IPG Media Brands is a global company, and we have very strong teams in the US, in UK, or EMEA team. We see a lot of, they help really with solutions, with internal switches automation, like measurement is a big thing, right, with everything. So those things really, that helps a lot. Also knowledge base is really crucial. So we get to share across markets, which opens up a lot of possibilities. And yet again, Belgium is so small. So we're often also kind of like a guinea pig kind of type of market, which is super interesting because, again, we're small, but if you can make it work in Belgium, you can make it work anywhere because of the granularity very often. So for me, positioning is ideal. It's not always ideal because, again, we may have less of financial means. There is our clients, right? Everything that if you have to develop everything in-house and you have to take certain measures, budgets all of a sudden become crucial as well. So I think it's a balance. It's really the usage of all together under the umbrella of IPG Media Brands. I really like that. I think for a lot of stuff, you have to work local, especially first party data. You have to bundle forces locally. A small country, small data sets, doesn't really matter how small it is. It's about quality, but at least work together. Don't start to kind of separate everything and create your own walled gardens. Just combine, right? It's a small area, small country. There's a lot of strength in it. And like I said, we like to do things well and not fast. So yeah, that's a little bit of a difference.
Yeah, that makes sense. And obviously you mentioned the kind of the concept around collaboration, and collaboration obviously comes up a lot on this podcast, given what InfoSum does. So in your opinion, what role do agencies play when it comes to data collaboration and technology like data clean rooms that have emerged over the last 2 or 3 years as being a prominent feature of the tech stack?
Yeah, so agencies, I think, will always be... Agents have to position themselves as the middleman, the trusted middleman. We are agnostic. You should be agnostic. If you have an agency that is not, that is tied into a particular technology, I would be very concerned, in all fairness. So that agnosticity is really important. You have to also understand what serves for what purpose serves for what. There is, again, the walled gardens, we have the Google, the Meta, we have local solutions. Important to know all, but also know the difference and try to work with all. And the consultancy factor is really important. And on the other hand, apart from consultancy and discussions, you have to open the door to really get everybody in the room. So on a market perspective, it would be the local publishers, your clients, agencies, any other experts in the field. On a client part, it would be get IT in the room, get data in the room, get your legal in the room, right? It's not just the marketing team anymore. You have to get everybody on board. And from our side, yeah, just read a lot, do it, implement, get your hands dirty, and make sure that you keep in the expertise and you can offer this to your clients. Whether they keep this in-house, but I think that's not really a priority. Really, it has to be at least an offering. The same thing with the analysis. It's a huge factor, especially with data clean rooms, with first-party data. If you are working with your users, you need to understand them, and you can't just understand them for what you've collected. It's too narrow. It's not wide enough, right? So data partners become extremely important, specifically for the insights. Activation too, of course, but insights, again, analysis. We have learned through working several projects already with data clean room, especially standalone, like with InfoSum, right? Like where you can combine more partners and you can create that transparency. That's a huge eye opener. And if you think you know your clients, very often you don't. And what's interesting too is it's not even about activation. It's really where do they position themselves, and on other channels that maybe don't have that activation part, you still have a lot of learnings about that, those insights. And that's super, super crucial.
You touched on so many things there, and I think they're all incredibly important around, you know, having all the right people in the room at the right time to have those conversations, because there's so many people now that touch data or get involved in data-driven advertising as a whole. But also the insights piece, I just think is fascinating. So often I think brands, media companies have a certain perception of their audiences, of their customers, and often when you actually dig into those insights and you can bring in insights external from your organization, you get a much different picture and a much better understanding of who those customers
transparency,
are.
Transparency is key. Yeah. Especially if you work on, like, again, you want to provide some customer service to your clients. They gave you permission to serve them right? And to give them the advantage of some quality advertising and not just the pop-ups. So something good. So at least you do that, right? You work with your messages and again, the insights, and then you sit together with your creative team and you talk with that and you just provide quality. And that's what you should do with your first party. It should be always priority on your list. And it usually is, actually, in all fairness. However, it's not that simple. So those insights, super valuable activation. Everybody can activate first party data, but just make sure that the data that you're using and all the data that you retrieve and the learnings are as transparent as you can get. That's really, there's no, for me personally, there's absolutely no excuse for, we hear this a lot. Yeah, no, on the model, we're not gonna, because that might, we can't give you our secrets. There's no secret, right? It's a model. Like, we're not gonna rebuild it. We wouldn't, because that leaves us nowhere, but at least be open about it and let's discuss this. Like, why have you done it? And very often we see there's a legacy, a whole legacy behind it, again, related to third-party data thinking, DMP. You have to rethink everything. This is about your users. This is, even though without a clean room is anonymized, right? There's never any PII which really matches. It's on a segment level. At the end of the day, it is. The key is an email or an ID or whatever, like it's personal identifier. So you can't get away with it anymore to just say, like, look, we have this huge volume of data. We know everything about everybody in Belgium. Well, that should raise a red flag, because that's not how this really works. You want to know exactly who you're working with. You want to have quality categorization. You want to really understand the users that you match with and that you put this effort in and that, yeah, a lot of people are involved with. So you have to create some quality.
Yeah, I agree. I think transparency is just so incredibly important. It's, you know, so anytime key. Any system that kind of still relies on some kind of black box processing, I think is, you know, to your point, is a kind of an almost an instant red flag. And it's what I've always loved about the way that data cleanroom technology should work, is that it's direct first party data matching, right? So there's no secrets there. This should be true, high quality data being used to drive insights, to drive activation, to drive measurement, to drive all those use cases, but doing it in a way that is entirely transparent and entirely privacy centric and kind of prioritizes the privacy of those consumers. So I think the theme around transparency is just never going to get old and is only going to get more and more important.
Transparency and what you just mentioned too, privacy safe, those are really two very important keywords. And that should be forefront, whatever. And all the rest is on the side. And all these discussions about, yeah, but we can't really show you, we can't really give any insights. We're not allowed to talk about this. We're not allowed to speak about our categorization or modeling. That does not make a whole lot of sense. That shouldn't be that. But I think those things will change. You can't keep this up if you're working in a data clean room.
Yeah, definitely. And I think to your point, I think it'll be hopefully the clients, the brands, the media companies that will help to drive that change forward. So from your perspective and the experience you have of working with so many clients, what are your clients asking for right now? What are their biggest challenges? Is it transparency? Is it measurement? What's kind of their biggest challenge right now?
It's definitely measurement. That's a big one. The cookieless, I feel like the everything that's those are technical challenges. A lot of clients take this into their own hands. They're already working with it, especially the bigger ones that really require, that are really focusing on this concept. So they're already aware of it. There is also they have more budgets. We have various clients. We have the big ones. We also have the smaller ones. The smaller ones is also, again, it's a whole different kind of challenge. But sometimes it's also about just talking to your clients and give them, put the options open, but also mention you don't necessarily need to do everything in this list. It's fine to skip this. It's fine if you don't want to personalize or if you have no interest in first-party data whatsoever. So it really just depends. Measurement is definitely a challenge. And then again, because the bigger ones are the loudest, and a lot of it is performance, and performance is under pressure a lot. And to that note, I think, again, it's something that should come from an agency. It's just to really redefine those KPIs and look at, is this really how you want to define your marketing stack? Is this still working? Did it work before? Was it, there's already years of missing data. This is not something new. Server-side tagging, for instance, is another solution that we work with or that we advise, that we implement with clients. It's nothing new. All data clean room is nothing new. It's just a bit hot at the moment, but none of these things are new. So it's really just understanding, no panic, think this through. Maybe you have solutions, maybe you're working towards solutions, maybe there's other stuff, and it's custom. Every client has to check their own ways. But yeah, it's challenging.
I think it's good advice, though. Don't panic. I think that was a good bit of advice you got in there, which is, you know, it's better to focus on things you can control. It's kind of, they say it's the cause of stress is focusing on things you can't control. So focus on things you can control, and then we can kind of continue to drive the industry forward. And obviously a big part of driving the industry forward, and we've touched on it many, many times already, and I look forward to the day when I never have to talk about third-party cookies again. But, you know, third-party cookies are arguably on their way out. Finally, the end seems to be in sight. In your opinion, who's responsible for now rebuilding the foundation of the digital advertising industry that's so long has relied on third-party cookies? How do we rebuild the foundation to be better in the future?
I like that question. I liked it or not. It's very loaded. I think I'm definitely willing to take up the responsibility from the agency. I think that we have to, right? So we help, we think, again, talk to the clients, but also talk to the industry, advise them, be transparent about that too. What is the actual question of the client? Is this really important? Do we really need to do this? Or should we move to this? What's working? What's not working? Can we test? Can you help us test? Can you provide budgets to test? Can you open up? So all these things, I think, again, the agency is kind of the middleman there also, because we have hands-on experience. So the advice is much more deliverable. However, it has to come from all the ways. And then, of course, you have the walled gardens that everybody's looking at. So Google, it was supposed to, with their solution, the privacy sandbox, they were coming up with the solution to replace the third-party cookies. It should not be replaced. It has to be rethought. And don't get me wrong, I think Google is doing really good and very interesting stuff. That doesn't matter. It's not about, again, it's not a comparison. It's just they're very typical in their approach, and their responsibility at the end of the day will lay with Google. That's why it's a walled garden. So, and actually on that note, I have to, somebody once told me, and I thought that was a really good one, if the grass is greener in the garden on the other side, it actually means that they put more shit in the soil. So I thought that was a really, that makes it very, that's again, refers to the transparency. You don't necessarily see why it would perform better, and you have no idea. So responsibility should also be shared by the clients. Do they want to know? We've done analysis that they don't want to hear this. They don't care. They just want to see this perform. The black box need to be opened up, but you need to want to hear it sometimes to say, like, okay, you think this is doing this, but so yeah, responsibility is really, it's a shared responsibility, and agencies should open this discussion up as well. I think we're perfectly situated in the middle there to get everybody around the table.
Yeah, I agree. I think it's important point. And obviously it's, you mentioned it's been, I think, 6 years since this journey on cookie deprecation started, when Apple first kind of blocked cookies in Safari with ITP back in 2017 and 2018. What do you think has stopped the industry moving faster? So what has delayed our transition to a better future? And how do we kind of move beyond that? Is it just inertia? As long as the third-party cookie is available, quote unquote, mm-hmm. they will continue to use it. How do we stop that delay and move on?
Well, that's very obvious, right? It's just you stop and that's it. You have to move on. We've been talking, we've been advising, nobody really moves on. It's also like everything comes down to finance, to budgets. The budgets, why would you take a measurement that's going to cost you more? Because at the end of the day, all these solutions are not for free anymore. Data is no longer for free. People have to realize that. It's a mindset that has to change. And it's not necessarily a bad thing. I think it's actually a really, really good thing. But that's, of course, from a data perspective, we've seen a lot. And so media spend is a huge thing as well. Optimize on that. So that means that you allocate certain budgets that you actually thought, like, oh, we're going to launch another campaign and another and another. No, just focus on frequency, on users, get pushback data in the data clean rooms. That's a really big one, where actually after the post campaign, we get data back in the data clean room. We can see who's actually been served an ad and who has not been served. Optimize on that, have a look at that and see where was this, like, is this necessary? And then if you optimize your media spend, so if you decrease and you're more qualitative, those budgets should be reallocated to the solutions. At the end of the day, it's always all about money, but it will equalize. I'm pretty convinced on that. Maybe not now. Everybody's testing, new things arrive, and we all want to jump that boat. And so, yeah, this extra money needs to be made available to. But after a while, it will equal itself out, and it will settle down. And I'm pretty convinced that it will equal out completely. But that's one of the things. So the only reason why everybody's moving forward now is really literally because Chrome, which is actually only 50% of, in Belgium at least, I think it's 53% or something, of the Chrome, of the users use Chrome as a browser. So we already lost a whole lot. We already know, we already told. So now the rest of them is finally going, and now they will change. When zero is left, then they have to. So that's the instigator. And there's still interesting discussions going on that say, like, yeah, but if the DMA doesn't approve of what the solution that Google is coming up with, then maybe it's going to be postponed again. We'll see. But until that time, third-party cookies will not, nobody will say, even on service side tagging. Yesterday I heard somebody say, on like client side tagging, and you have server side, client side is in a third party context. The server side is actually moving up. It's costing some more money. You need more technical expertise, but it's in a first party context. So that's what you want, right? So, and yesterday there was somebody saying it's actually, they recommend a hybrid method a lot because it provides you better QA, quality assurance, comparison, and what's working and whatnot. But that's going to last until the end of this year, and then voila, it stops. However, maybe it gets postponed again, and I'm pretty sure that they will keep that running until really the final day. So that's just the reality of it all. We don't need to do anything. I don't know why. It's just the reality. I think it's common sense too. But it will happen, of course. Nothing is available anymore.
Yeah, inertia is a powerful driver, right? People will continue to do what they can. I think, to your point, I think it's so important that companies have the ability to take their own destiny in their hands, right? So yes, maybe Google delays further, or they're forced to delay further, but why would you delay your plans further? So yes, we know exactly. The inevitability is coming. Cookies will go one way or another. So take your destiny into your hands. And to your point, use the time we have now to do that A-B testing to see actually, and what we've seen with a lot of the people we work with, is that first-party data is outperforming third-party cookies, because it was never really a good being used well originally. So now we have a better way to move forward as soon as you can prove that. And then to your point, the media spend follows that first party data world. And then we can all transition and hopefully never see another cookie in a photo on a random article ever again. And we can all just, we can all focus on that. And to that point, I think, you know, if we picture a world where third-party cookies are finally deprecated this year or early next year, and we can move the conversation on to other topics, what excites you about the industry and where we're headed?
I find it all exciting, to be honest. It's, first of all, it's a better quality of what we're doing. If you're on more on the data side, that's, and you think this is important, and you talk about transparency, and then that's a forefront. And sometimes it's hard because simply because you what you were saying too, like we know that the third party is not really performing, or we know this, we know that. And so it's sometimes hard to, if you work in an agency, at the end of the day, that's what we do. If they just want to put it out there and have broad or whatever, it doesn't really matter. And a client should always have that choice, but well-informed. So the quality for me is actually that's I think is going to be a big thing, and that I really like. I also think that one of the, and so data clean rooms, right? They're emerging. It's becoming more and more popular. I think that will also evolve. It will become, there will be more data clean room solutions available. It will be better because we talk about it. We get advice. We sit together, and it's going to be, right now it's still a high-end, like attribute affinity analysis. I know for a fact that even though everybody says, oh yeah, we're doing it, it's actually not the case. So connect to an API, get then that query up and running, download it, put it back together. Like, oh, we have a brilliant analyst in-house that does all of this. It's not easy. That's going to change too. I think it's really going to move to a way where the user interface is going to be, you drag and drop. It's going to be much quicker. It's much easier. And then, of course, another big hot topic is the whole, like you have machine learning, you will have AI getting involved in all of this. And that's how it should be. It should become easier. It should become better. We should move to modeling more. We should move to prediction. We should move to automation. But however, privacy will always have to be a priority.
Yeah, I mean, I think the future is so bright from what I can see, and everything feels like we are now heading in the right direction. So as you look to the future, what are your predictions of the future of data collaboration and the future of data privacy? Where do you see the industry going in the next, let's say, 5 to 10 years?
Another thing, I think locally, you have to realize that this you have to get together. At some point, especially if you're looking for data partners, they're going to be inherent to the market. When we work with clients that are cross-market, it makes a lot of sense to have a standalone agnostic solution in place that you can then actually export and connect to the different platforms in the different markets. However, a market will always remain very, very specific. So there should be kind of like an assembly or a first party data club, something cool with cigars and good wine.
There you go.
and where you open up this topic and actually to everyone, and you decide to actually go look for data partners. It doesn't mean that you have a very small data set that you cannot enter these kind of solution. It also doesn't mean that because you have, for instance, really good first party data, you're all of a sudden going to get rich. It is the new gold. It's more, I think, related to the fact that it's super important. Another thing is too, sometimes we have clients that give us say like, voila, we have a very valuable data set, but then it's actually non-PII, so we cannot, there's no key, so that's not usable, but they have a lot of volume through their analytics tools. So there's so many misunderstandings. And then again, on the legal perspective as well, if there would be any kind of standardization, you see this DPO has done this, I think we should do this or this. That would be extremely helpful as well. This is really a local thing, and then it can be smoothened out across markets. But there's always going to be particularities locally, always.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, I think it's a fascinating time ahead as kind of the industry does try to rebuild itself. I genuinely believe we're going to rebuild for a better future where performance will be better, the experience will be better, and companies will benefit from that. So I think it's incredibly exciting. We've covered a lot, and this has been such a fantastic conversation. I've really enjoyed it. You know, this podcast is all about interviewing people like yourself who are pioneering new ways to use data to deliver those better advertising experiences and that deliver that better performance. So when you look to people that you admire within the industry, who would you nominate for us to interview on an upcoming episode?
Yeah, that was a difficult one. I had to think that through a little bit. But actually, it's also at the same time very straightforward. I would like to, because I listened to some podcasts already and I'm still missing some client side, like very specific local client side. So I'm nominating Dawn Dipendale and Mikael Bassanello from the National Lottery. They would be very interesting to have their perspective on how it works from their end and the difficulties that they have to upload first party data and the plans. They have a lot of plans. It's really amazing. And they have an extremely clean and good first party data set.
Yeah, that'd be awesome. We'll definitely reach out to them and see if we can get them on the podcast. Thank you so much for joining us today. This was a really fascinating conversation. I really appreciate your time and thank you for being an identity architect.
Thank you. Thank you for this wonderful conversation.
Thanks again to Lisbeth for joining us on Identity Architects. It was fascinating for me to learn more about the ecosystem and the industry progress that's happening in Belgium. And I join Lisbeth in expressing excitement for where we're heading as an industry. All that leaves for me to do is remind you to hit that subscribe button so you'll know when the next episode of Identity Architects lands. But until then, thanks for listening.